Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Happy birthday to my one and only son out there. Tuesdays on Jaguars Today brought to you by Kenny Lay and Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Daddy's not getting you a divorce for your birthday, Colin. It'll be okay. I'm coming home this afternoon. 11 years ago, Tony.
Yeah.
I became a proud papa. Great day.
Gosh, that was 11 years now.
Isn't that crazy? Remember that little picture, Colin, I used to have on my my office door at the other building? Little cute little baby. What happened to that kid? Man, unbelievable. He is a monster now. His best friend is in a grade ahead of him, mm-hmm. and he's now at least a full 2 inches taller than the kid. So he is, he's gonna hit that growth spurt here pretty soon, and he's gonna be, I'm sure, just as awkward as dad was all throughout those all important teenage years.
At least you can help him out.
Coming
if
up.
He wants any help.
I don't know. I don't know if it helps. Hey, son, I was awkward and gawky and all these things too. No, he's way ahead of the game as far as in comparison to dad goes. So happy birthday to my son, Colin, out there. He shares a birthday with Mike Tyson, something I like to remind my wife of every year. Really puts her in the right frame of mind. It's the final day of the first half of the year, Tony.
It's Iron Mike's birthday, huh?
It is Iron Mike's birthday, and it's a very poignant, special day for all of us to gather around the hearth and tell warm stories of Iron Mike coming out there in his black trunks with no socks.
I'll praise the Allah.
I'll praise the Allah. And I will, you know all the
rest. I will eat his children.
He'll eat your children. He's impregnable.
That's right. My
indomitable.
Defense is impregnable. My offense is indomitable. I will eat
Iron
his
Mike.
Children. I'll praise the Allah.
He did not eat my child.
No.
And I only had the one, so I didn't have any to spare. So there you have it. All right. Moving on today. That will tie in with the Tom Bush question today. We'll get to that coming up here shortly, Tony. You know, we talked about this yesterday a little bit with John Osier, and who, as predicted, we wouldn't see him for the rest of the week. The ghost town is in full effect.
Yes,
right
it
now.
Is.
I mean, Ozone being in here yesterday at least gave you some semblance that maybe someone still realized there was an NFL franchise that had a pulse in Jacksonville. But other than those intrepid ticket sellers, man, and the security up at the front desk, even the nice young lady who always gives us our thought for the day on Monday, didn't bring him in yesterday. I said, where's my thought for the day? She said, well, I didn't think anybody would be here. Well, your thought was a wrong one then. So that's the kind of situation we're working in down here at Everbank. But it's nice. It's quiet. Nobody can keep an eye on us if we're getting up to any kind of trouble and hijinks. As far as we know, there are no hidden cameras in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Could be wrong, though, Tony. It's very surveillance oriented society
it
that
is.
We live in today. So who knows? We're not doing anything bad, as far as you know, down here. Well, no one's keeping an eye on us. But, you know, we talked about this yesterday with Osier, about the enthusiasm certain fans have, probably over the top. You know, they think everything is great about the franchise, and they think perennially this team's headed to the playoffs, no matter what the evidence may suggest otherwise. And then you've got the guys on the opposite end of the spectrum. No matter what this team does, no matter what move they make, it just won't satisfy them, right? It's the wrong move. They're expecting the worst. And there's understandable reasons to some degree, you know, when you've had a down period like the Jags fans have had and the team has had 9 wins in 3 years. You get it.
Sure.
And you don't want to hear, well, other teams have had it worse for longer. It doesn't matter. You know, you
are dealing with whatever you're dealing with.
That's your team.
Yeah.
And you want it to do well. But
it is funny, though. Like, I was watching NFL Network does NFL's greatest games. They show it every afternoon. Basically, as we're leaving here. So sometimes when I get home, I can watch the last couple minutes if I want to. And one of the games they showed last week was a playoff game in 1993 between Green Bay and Detroit. And I saw the preamble going into that one. Just happened to be there at the right time. And they were talking about Green Bay, which is historically one of the best franchises in the National Football League. They're obviously flying high, have been since Brett Favre got there in the early 90s. But they were doing all the pregame for that 1993 playoff game against Detroit. And from 1967, when they won Super Bowl II, until 1993, the Green Bay Packers organization had won one playoff game.
One playoff game in how many years is that? That's 25 years, basically, right?
Basically.
26 years.
Look, there are teams that have a whole lot more historical success than even the Jaguars have that have had more troubles. But it's playing in today's modern age in the NFL where it's designed for you to turn it around at some point in time, basically, to watch this team for a decade just be stuck in the mire of being a 6-win team, 5-win team is frustrating.
Right. Prior to free agency, it was tough to jumpstart your team at times. Green Bay obviously got in with Reggie White and turned their fortunes around, one of the first big winners in free agency. Ironic, though, that franchise and that organization has stayed away from that path. For the most part.
Yes, they have.
After that sign, there have been a couple of other key ones over the years. But, you know, just going back to this point about what your perception of this football team is going to be, we're here all the time, and we want them to do well. And it's tough not to think that good people are going to provide a good product and do a good job. You know, Dave Caldwell, we like him personally. He seems like a really good guy from what we know of Dave Caldwell. We think he's making sound football moves. Doesn't mean he's going to have a perfect mark. He's not going to bat 1,000 in that regard, but we think he's making more good moves than bad moves. We understand the vision that he has, whether he's executing it by getting the right picks to fit that vision. Time will continue to tell on that. You know,
sure.
Gus Bradley, who doesn't like Gus Bradley? Phenomenal guy. The players love him. Seems like a good motivator. Seems like a sound football mind. Hasn't gotten results yet so far, but that doesn't dampen our enthusiasm or hope that that's going to be the case. Yet maybe the people who are on the pessimistic side are the right ones, Tony. I don't know. Because, you know, a story just came out this morning. Looking forward, you would think where the Jags are going to excel against their league mates in national perception is going to be with an eye towards the future, right?
Yeah.
I can get where are they right now among franchises. Well, they've been consistently picking in the top three for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So they're bad.
And I can't remember, ESPN put this story up here this morning that we're about to talk about. And I can remember last year when we talked about this same story, right? It's something that they seem to be releasing late June, early July each year. And it's a projection of the next 3 years, basically. And they're asking some of their NFL experts with ESPN to rank these different categories, roster without the quarterback, rank the quarterback position on that roster, the draft, front office, and coaching on a scale of 0 to 100. And then they weight each of those scores and come up with your overall score. And I can remember last year when we talked about this article, and I actually went through and looked at where the Jags were last year and all the teams that they were above on this list last year and did a little bit of math to figure out what kind of shaking went on with all those teams, because they weren't in the spot they're in on this list last year. And trying to figure out what went so bad for this team in 1 year that everyone feels about them, at least from the ESPN perspective, the way they do, compared to the way they felt about the future of this franchise just a year ago, kind of leaves you scratching your head.
Well, and we say the ESPN perspective. It's the John Clayton, Mike Sando, and who was the third one that voted in this? There were three of the national writers for ESPN that basically voted on this. I would scroll to the top if that were a simple process on my TRS-80.
John Clayton, Lewis Riddick, and Mike Sando.
Okay, Mike Sando and Lewis Riddick. All right, so three respected national pundits. How well they know the Jaguars compared to some others, it's difficult to say, but I think that, you know, in talking with John Clayton at the Super Bowl over the last couple of years, I find him, he's certainly been marginalized on TV. You know, he doesn't fit the in-your-face kind of mentality that ESPN likes to have, you know, with one-liners and all that. He's just a steady football reporter. He's gotten boring, I think, in the eyes of a lot of people. But every time I talk to him, and even when I bring up Jacksonville, he seems to be pretty sharp and seems to have a pretty good knowledge base on what's going on here. Keeping in mind, he's based in Seattle. He probably knows Gus Bradley fairly well and knows of him and his coaching success more so than the typical guy out there. But Tony, they're not at all enthusiastic about where this Jaguar organization is headed. And it's not that they're trying to, you know, run them into the ground. As you said, they're voting in five different categories.
Right.
But where did it go so bad from just a year ago? We'll go through some where the scores were a year ago in their perception compared to where they are now. How do they get so much worse in a year, I don't see. And again, are we the ones who are too close to the situation? Last year at this time, we would have told you the same thing. We just don't see it. How can everybody be picking this team for four or five wins again? They won four last year. They got to be better. They didn't have to be better, did they?
No.
They were worse in the only measure that ultimately counts, and that's the win-loss column. They were worse last year. So are we, when I say we, are people who are like-minded like me, who are anticipating a major step forward this year, are we deluding ourselves into what we hope will happen actually being likely to happen? To spare you any suspense, the Jags rank dead last in this ranking of the expectation of where these franchises will be over the next 3 years. Not just this year, but now we're talking about as this young roster comes to fruition and grows up into their football prime, basically at the same time, not 100% across the board, but the core of this team comes into their own, they're going to be the worst franchise in the National Football League, according to these pundits at ESPN.
Yeah, and it's weird how much jumping around there's been on this list. But when you look at the specific numbers, right, we talked about the categories, roster, independent of the quarterback position, then they judge the quarterback position, the draft, front office, and coaching. It's the roster number where they stayed at 31st in the NFL. They were 31st last year, 31st this year, according to these guys. The number, though, dropped from 63.8 to 45.3 to remain at 31st. So are they just that much more harsh judging these
teams?
Are they
grading them so much more significantly?
That's an 18-point drop, and they're in the same position they were last year.
Even with Dante Fowler Jr. not being – don't count him. Right, don't count him at all. Say he's hurt, you can't know what you're ever going to get from a guy who's never played it down in the National Football League. How's the roster not better right now than it was last year with the addition of guys like Julius Thomas and Jared Odrick and, you know, several other guys who aren't huge name guys but should be upgrades? Certainly, Jeremy Parnell coming in, I mean, the offensive line should be better. We talk about the areas where they're going to be better. Typically, guys going into their second year are going to be better than they were thrown into the deep end as rookies. And you would think that would carry some weight, but you're right.
Sure.
Striking in which direction the numbers have gone. And we'll get into that coming up here.
Do you remember where they were ranked last year?
Overall?
Yeah.
Like 26-ish?
Because I'll tell you where they were ranked last year and let you know where the teams that were below them, because they were not 32 last year. I'll let you know where they were last year and what some of the teams that were below them have done in 1 year.
Hold that thought, and we'll get to that coming up. Also coming up today, we're going to start to preview. You know, in past years, we've gone division by division at around this time, and we've talked to correspondents from every team in the National Football League and try to get a sense of what other teams are doing. And so this year, we're going to try something a little bit different. We're going to try to make it a little bit more Jaguar-centric and something that maybe has a little bit more staying power. And what we're going to do is take the schedule in the order of the games that they're played. And we're going to talk to people covering those specific teams, starting with the Carolina Panthers, who the Jaguars host in Week 1. We'll talk with their play-by-play man, Mick Mixon, coming up in a little over an hour. And you got a team who went 7-8-1 last year but won their division. They're thinking, hey, you know what? We've got a good defense with some improvements on offense. We can be even better this year. We won the division last year. We can get right back to the playoffs. They won a playoff game against Arizona, albeit with not much at quarterback for the Cardinals. But we'll see where Carolina Panthers' heads are right now through the eyes of one Mick Mixon. And we'll do Miami coming up on Thursday. And every week we'll take a couple of games in the order that the Jags will play them. And we'll find out a little bit more about the upcoming 2015 opponents in that vein. Today, Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Told you it was kind of a birthday-related deal. What's the best Jaguar-related birthday gift you've ever given or received? You can share your thoughts with us on that on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, and you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Of course, phone lines open to you throughout. 641-1010, the number that also doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. So send your texts, whatever's on your mind from a Jaguar perspective. We'll get into these ESPN rankings a little bit, which we told you the Jags projected by some of the ESPN brain trust to be the worst franchise in the National Football League over the next 3 years to come. What a depressing thought that is. The good news is those guys aren't nearly always right. But we'll certainly look at their methodology and how they arrived at that ranking. Also, CBS Sports has out a basically a list of the best single season in each franchise's history. Shouldn't be hard to figure out what tops the list for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Look at some of the highlights of that from around the National Football League as well. Again, 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board with that. Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're live at EverBank. Tuesdays brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars today just getting rolling on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars today live at EverBank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Final day of June. First half of the year. Fold it up. Put it away. See you later.
It's almost July. We're a day away from July. This is crazy.
Yes. That's life, though, man.
Yeah, man.
The older you get, the faster they go, Tony.
Yeah. Training camp is 4 weeks from Friday.
Is that right?
Yeah.
4 weeks from this upcoming Friday?
Yeah.
That sounds exhausting. Let's take Friday off. All right. Good plan, and all of you out there should adhere to that plan as well with the Independence Day weekend coming up. I spent the break, Tony, trying to navigate back to the Jaguars portion on this list.
Yes.
From John Clayton. Happy to let you know that I just got back there.
Yeah.
Now, after a series of clicks.
You and, made it.
And page unresponsive messages and on it goes. The TRS-80. It's humming along. Put an extra quart of oil in her. And don't mind those noxious fumes in here, Tony. My computer's going to do just fine for the rest of the program today. Am I making it obvious yet? I think it's the wrong time to do it. I think Shad's anywhere close to Jacksonville right
nobody
now.
Nobody here.
There's no one around to hear my complaints are falling on deaf ears. And you're probably all tired of hearing them. But that's kind of me. What am I going to do but complain? 641-1010. Let's get Dean up to start us off today. And we'll get into some of the specifics of why the brain trust of Messrs. Clayton, Sando, and Riddick find the Jaguars wanting on their future projections. Dean, first up on Jaguars today. Good morning, Dean. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning. I've spoken with you guys in the past, but I'm encouraged by this team that we have in place as far as Caldwell and the coaching staff and trying to make the right choices and trying to get the right talent in here. I mean, I think, you know, as we saw with Blaine Gabbert, I mean, you know, attitude has so much to do with it. I mean, they had that chance to take Johnny Manziel and to see where he's gone. So I think they're on the right track. It's just a matter of these guys doing it on the field and, you know, the whole psyche, trying to get into these guys' psyche, whether they're going to produce or not at an NFL level. I mean, it's just like earlier show, they were talking about the transition from high school to college and trying to get these guys produced. But I think we got the right team, and I think the point was made, you know, the three draft choices of Bortles, Fowler, and Jokel, you know, key positions that you need, you know, whether they're going to produce or not at those positions. But I think Caldwell and Gus Bradley are in the right direction. I'm just hopefully we'll see some winning football this year. I mean, being invested in Jags is a season ticket holder. I mean, I certainly want to go down and see wins rather than losses, or at least like exciting football.
Yeah, no doubt, Dean. Thank you for the call. And in the end, all these things are what they are, Tony. They're off-season fodder to discuss and have no impact on how teams actually perform on the field, right? So who cares?
No.
Who cares what three guys at ESPN think of this team in the middle of June or the end of June? Well, we do because it is the end of June, and there's, you know, not a whole lot going on the field to speak of. In fact, nothing. So you take a look at these kind of projections, but in the end, if Blake Bortles primarily plays up to or above expectations, a lot of this is going to go away because quarterback is that important to the overall success of the franchise. You got to have the pieces around him. Let me ask you, do you feel like Dave Caldwell has how do you feel? I don't even want to lead you with the question. How do you feel about what kind of job he's done accruing talent for this roster over the last 3 years?
I go back to what it looked like 3 years ago, and we talked about it yesterday with John Osier. I don't feel like they've made a lot of mistakes, and I don't know what I would tell him to have done differently besides something like Daryl Smith. I don't know what I would tell him to have done differently than what he's done to this point. Maybe Leonard Williams this year in the draft. That's probably who I would have taken instead of Dante Fowler Jr., but I totally understood that. I think, look, you...
Then you're talking about one guy.
Yeah,
though,
but you
right?
see an article like this, right, where the Jags are 32nd among teams looking at a three-year outlook, and I think what I want to do when I see something like that, what it makes me do is, all right, let me take a step back. right? Because I'm, like you said, we're so close to this one. We're so close to what's going on in Jacksonville that I think sometimes you do get caught up a little bit. So let's take a step back and look at what this team has done over the course of the last couple of years and what it looks like going into the future. I still don't think, even doing that, that they have the worst outlook in the National Football League. I don't believe that. Do I think that there are big question marks about what this team can possibly do in the next couple of years? Yes. I think that there are, because, look, the caller just mentioned the three first-round draft picks. Luke Jokel hasn't shown you anything to make you think he's a left tackle of the future yet. Blake Bortles is a guy, his first year was bad. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have any kind of talent, but his first year was bad in the National Football League, and that's what we've seen from him in 1 year. And Dante Fowler Jr. isn't going to play football this year. I think there are reasons to have big, arching questions about what's going on in Jacksonville and the future of this franchise, considering the staples that they're trying to build it on haven't shown on the field reasons to believe in them yet. So to have those questions, I think is completely fair. Doesn't mean I think they have the worst outlook of any team in the league.
Where were they ranked last year in this?
23rd. They were 23rd.
So they're seen as a semi-ascending team,
yes,
right? Considering at this point last year they had won 7 games in 2 years or 6 games in 2 years, right? So they'd gone from 2 to 4 wins, and starting to get their pieces in place. They had just drafted their quarterback.
Yep.
Seen as 23rd. So bunch of teams that they were, you know, on track to outpace over the next 3 seasons. Then they took a step backwards, at least in the win-loss column, or maintain the status quo, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
And now they are dead last in this whole thing. The roster last year was ranked between 0 to 100, was given a score of 63.8, which you mentioned was the second worst. Taking the quarterback out, the non-quarterback portion of the roster was second worst in the league. They're still second worst in the league, but this year the score is 45.3. Maybe we shouldn't get hung up on the scores, and maybe we should look more where they are relative to the other teams,
yeah,
in these guys' minds, because that seems like such a big drop to go from 63.8 to 45.3 on your score. How can the roster truly be worse by that big a margin than it was a year ago, with the addition of another free agent class and the addition of another draft class, even without Dante Fowler Jr.?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get that, but that seems to be what they feel about it. We'll go through some of the comparative scores between last year and this year. Let's go back to the phones, though, and welcome Jerome to the program. Jerome, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, man.
Morning.
What's
How
up?
Y'all doing? Yeah, I just want to say I think it all starts in the trenches, and I think if they can protect us and open up holes for the run game, it will take a whole lot of pressure off that defense. Because right now, I mean, I think we have a young team, but they're getting older, and the older players on the older teams are getting older. So, I mean, it's time for, I guess, you know what I mean? It takes 3-4 years for these drafted players that we draft produce or show their colors. So I really want to give them like 3-4 years. So I think if they start showing signs this year, Jacksonville does, then I think next year would be the year that, okay, they should be producing next year. But this year, I still think it's still a growing process, because you're only in the third year of your draft picks of the regime. And I think it just takes time, 3-4 years, to actually see something going on, especially the way they blew the team up, blew the roster up, and you're starting from the bottom, and you're starting with a whole bunch of young players. And free agency is hard to get players that you want, because there's 31 other teams that want the same players. So, I mean, you can't expect just overnight to build through the free agency. I think it takes time through the draft, but I still think it takes it. You have to let it run its course. I think it takes like 3-4 years.
And all right, thank you, Jerome. Appreciate it. Look, they clearly have not left it just a free agency. That's never been this team's motto. They spent more and more vigorously on bigger name guys this year. At least certainly they were chasing some big name guys that didn't make it to free agency. They landed one of Julius Thomas. They landed some other key guys, we think, not necessarily on his name recognition level. But it does, Tony, and I'm getting this on Twitter as well, for a draft class that was lauded around the National Football League, when you've got that and you add these guys, I don't see how they can fall off, not only with the overall roster, but what was the grade last year when it came to just the draft? It was 77.3,
yeah,
right? This year it's 59.3?
Again, I don't know. Like, does the injury to Dante Fowler weigh that much in the evaluators' minds? And speaking to what the caller was talking about there, John Clayton, in his breakdown on this, he talks about the youth movement for this team. Jaguars can't catch a break. Dante Fowler Jr., third pick, obviously lost to the ACL. He brings up Justin Blackmon and the fact that he's not here in Jacksonville anymore. And then he says Jacksonville is in the vicious cycle of drafting players, losing 11 to 13 games, ending up without any players we're signing to a second year, second contract. Well, if you're looking at a projection for this team going into the future, right? If it's about the next 3 years, then who the hell cares what Gene Smith did as a general manager, and this team needed to re-sign players from that team? If it's about the next 3 years, then I think you evaluate the drafts of Dave Caldwell, and I think there are players that he has drafted that look like they are on a pace right now to be guys that this team is going to build themselves around.
All right, but go to the guys who will come up first on these second-year contracts will be guys like Jonathan Cyprien, right? I mean, that's...
Hadn't shown enough yet.
That draft class will be 3 years in at this time next year, right? And for a lot of those guys, they'll be looking for, well, I guess you'll have, for a lot of those guys, you'll be looking for a contract extension at that point in time if one is going to come, right? How many of those guys out of that class are going to merit that right now? Just based on his first year class, which we're getting to the point where we start thinking about second contracts. Luke Jokel is a different story because you have team control on a fifth year with a first-round draft pick, so they don't have to make that decision for a little bit longer yet. And they still, I think, are hopeful that he will continue to grow into that, and he may well grow into that. But none of these guys you look at, Tony, maybe Demetrius McCray is the first guy you think of now, right, in terms of where his standing is with this team. I know Cyprien is locked in as a starter. I know Jokel's locked in as a starter. But their play on the field, I think there's been more buzz about Demetrius McCray's play on the field last year than there's been about either of those two more highly drafted guys, is my point. So if you look at that first draft, it's not just oozing with guys you say absolutely demand that second contract. Dwayne Grotz, right? I mean, Dwayne Grotz was going to be a cornerstone. Sure. Now he's fighting for significant playing time on this football team. So I can understand it from that point of view. Let's get back to the phones here and get DJ up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, DJ.
What's going on, fellas?
What's up?
My thing is right now, man, is I haven't heard a lot of the media here in town. And it seems like we're the only NFL team right now that attacks the head coach and the GM. Well, if you look around at the league as a whole, it's just the GM and the head coach are kind of separating themselves. And I feel like I think Dave has done a good job from what we had before, but the onus is on Gus. He's the head coach. And in my personal opinion, he hasn't did anything. But when we talk as their one is unity. You know, okay, they've got the players. The talent is improved. Everybody knows that. It might not have been improved to, you know, elite level, but we improved. My thing is Gus, it has to be separated because Gus has to coach. He hasn't did anything. 7-25 is nothing. So, and as a head coach in the NFL, you're based off your win and loss record. Head coach, not GM. And I think fans kind of don't separate the two. But if you look at the NFL, the other teams, they separate it all the time.
I wouldn't get too hung up on it, though, DJ. I think it's natural when you've got guys who are young like they are, Tony, kind of coming in together. You get to make that hire when you're Dave Caldwell. It's natural that these guys are paired together. They have such a similar vision when you hear these guys talk. Really, they really do work hand in hand. But don't kid yourself. You're right, ultimately, that one guy's job is not to protect the other guy's job, and they're not linked at the hip forever. If Gus were to have another season, let's say they were to go 3-13 this year, Tony, and there's going to be a long discussion about whether or not he's the guy that can take this group and get them to a more competitive place in the win-loss column. I hope he is. I don't know that he is. I certainly hope that's the case. I don't want to have that discussion, period. I want them to win 10 this year, and let's forget that discussion. We talk about what Absolutely. Rising young stars they are. But ultimately, I think the belief is talking to a lot of people around here, and by the way, nobody's trying to push anybody out the door, but that Dave Caldwell will have more security. GMs often get two coaches to prove that they're worthy of the job. And ultimately, Dave Caldwell probably has stronger job security. I mean, he's the one who decides on Gus Bradley, so he does have stronger job security in that sense. But I just hope it doesn't come down. I don't want to be having that discussion next year. They got to take, Tony, we got to eliminate, you know, Ron Zook used to call it the noise in the system. I think it's as appropriate a term as any. You don't want that. You don't want a whole season-long buzz of, we got to take a long, hard look at this guy. Are we going to get rid of this guy? Who are we going to get? Moving on. You want this to be a year where you take a major step forward. Just get to that 7-8 win range, and you're going to forget you're going to be seen again as an ascending team. You're going to eliminate a lot of this kind of conversation, and you know, nothing drags a franchise down. Well, there are a lot of things that do, but not many things drag it down. Like that constant, once you get to that discussion, is this the right guy for the job, and it's constant, you almost know a move is inevitable, right? Unless they change it and turn it around drastically. Once you get to that point where that conversation is being had, generally the coach ultimately loses his job in short order. And, it's up to Gus to win games this year to keep that conversation from happening.
No, it certainly is. And again, it's stepping back and looking at what this roster actually is, looking at where this team actually is. Look, they have won 7 games in the last 2 years, and I don't talk about before that, the 9 and 3 years. Who cares? These guys weren't here before that. I know the fans were, but I'm judging these guys based on what they're doing. We've been talking about since they came in. Nobody else has tried to rebuild in quite the same way that I think Jacksonville is trying to rebuild a roster. Nobody else has tried it this way, and we said it when it started. It could fail spectacularly, right? I mean, there is that possibility because no one else has done it quite this way, that in the end it just doesn't work. What they're trying to do just won't work. And when you look at what's going on with especially those top draft picks and that they're not getting a ton from any of those guys yet, that is the formula for a team trying to rebuild the way Jacksonville is for it to completely fail. So unless these guys, the Jokels, the Bortles, the Fowlers going into the future, the Jonathan Cyprians, unless those types of guys that they need to be building blocks on this roster if it's going to work in Jacksonville start taking these steps significantly forward in their career in 2015, then it's all going to get blown up again. And it's going to get blown up again in the near future here in Jacksonville. That's just the reality of the situation. I think there's more faith in Jacksonville that Blake Bortles is going to work out than there is in the national media, and I think there's reasons for that, again, because we're so close to it.
There are reasons, but there's also, I think, a lot of hope being applied to that.
I think so,
well,
too.
If you're just being truly critical and looking at it through an unbiased eye, and you just look at where Blake ranked, even compared to his fellow rookie quarterbacks last year, you can understand all the reasons for it, but the numbers are what the numbers are that he produced last year, and as I continue to say, I said it yesterday, I think he'll get whatever his full potential is out of himself because he works that hard. What that true full potential is, only time is going to tell.
Yep.
And it needs to start producing in a big-time way sooner rather than later. We got to take a timeout. Phone lines loading up. 641-1010. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Glad you're along with us. Tuesday is brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Reminder, check out Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor here. We won't be in on Friday, but they'll be here for you every day of the week. Since 1905, they've been serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer in Northeast Florida. Check them out online at ClaudeNolan.com. Visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. And when you do, give them a call or pop in. Mention Mike Dempsey sent you. They're going to take great, great care of you. They always do. Absolutely no dealer fees, by the way, at Claude Nolan Cadillac. 642-5111, our Friday sponsor. And we won't be around on Friday this week. So I wanted to remind you to check those guys out if you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. 641-1010 is our number, as it always is, and you can text in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at that number as well. Gary's been holding patiently, so let's go to him next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Good morning, guys. You know, as to that last caller, Gus Bradley's not a miracle worker. As you know, guys, I'm not a big Caldwell fan. I think they missed the boat. They should have went with Amari Cooper, give the young quarterback Bortles some help. sign Evan Mathis, guys, with all the salary cap room, even if it's just for a year or two. Plug him in. You can't tell me that he's not better than Zane Beatles as an offensive lineman. I don't care if he's 50 years old. He's better. He's a better player than Beatles. I am not a fan of Caldwell, and you can't make chicken salad out of chicken. You know what? And you've got to get the horses, and he's not bringing in the guys, in my opinion, to help a young quarterback out. Amari Cooper, I think, will be a star in Oakland, provided Carr has any time at all to throw the football. Help the young quarterback out. He didn't do that. I think he's just missing the boat as a GM, in my opinion. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you for the call. I mean, you know, people focus on that one pick because they didn't pick a wide receiver with the third pick, Tony. Means they're not helping the quarterback out.
I guess not.
All right. It means Julius Thomas is not designed to help the quarterback out. It means Jeremy Parnell and Stefan Wisniewski being added as potential
TJ
starters.
Elton.
That's not going to help the quarterback out. New running back, not going to help the quarterback out. They did draft a receiver ultimately in Rashad Green. Look, you can only get one at each pick. And you know what else would help the quarterback out? Maybe a guy who could get you 12 sacks and get the defense off the field quicker, get you more possession time on offense. All these things can help the quarterback out. I get the point Gary's making directly to Amari Cooper, but I scratch my head at this contention that they didn't do anything to help the quarterback out because they didn't draft this one specific wide receiver at that one specific spot.
And I get that there are people out there that think Amari Cooper is a big-time difference maker and will be at the next level, too. I know that there were guys at the station who felt that way.
People felt that way about Dante Fowler Jr., and they might have been right.
We talked about getting ready for the draft. I didn't feel that way about Amari Cooper, so I wasn't going to take him at 3 unless things fell really badly for the Jags or they traded back. It wasn't a guy that I was going to take at number 3. I know a lot of people disagree with me on that. That's fine. But if you want to talk about how much they've done or not done to help the offense, you're talking about potentially there are 4 spots on the offense that are going to be different than what they were last year. That's 4 out of 11 starters, guys, that are going to be different, and it could potentially be 5. Depending on what happens with that center and left guard spot, it could potentially be 5 spots that get turned over in one offseason while your starting quarterback is going into his second year because they felt like it needed that much improvement. And the complaint right now is that it wasn't 6, and I don't completely understand that. They've turned over half the offense.
Right, and they pursued Randall Cobb, right? They wanted to pursue Randall Cobb anyway to put him in the slot and keep Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson on the outside. You can't have everything. And I think, you know, all along their idea was we're going to get a defensive lineman. We're going to get a guy who can impact the pass rush at the top of this draft because there aren't that many. You can't find those guys in free agency. As it turned out, you couldn't get Randall Cobb in free agency either. But typically, there are more pass catchers available that route. Keep in mind, from the point they drafted Blake Bortles last year, Tony, what'd they do? They immediately went out and spent their next pick on a wide receiver, then traded up to spend their next pick on a wide receiver.
Yep.
Then they traded up to get him the guy that everyone says is the best offensive lineman on the team, and Brandon Linder. All those things were done immediately after drafting Blake Bortles. Hey, let's get some pieces in here. Again, it can't be done overnight. I get it. You wanted Amari Cooper. I just, the contention that they're not doing anything to help the quarterback or not doing enough. If you want to say they're not doing enough, that's at least a more reasonable stance to take. Clearly, they're doing a lot to try and help Blake Bortles. They just didn't do that one thing that you wanted them to do, and therefore, you're dissatisfied. You may turn out to be right. I mean, I'm not, who's to say?
Find out. They're going to play football this fall.
It's a tough position because we have no idea what kind of impact Dante Fowler Jr. could have made on this football team had he been healthy. And it's certainly not Dave Caldwell's fault that the guy got hurt in minigamp.
I mean,
it's just the way it goes from time to time. Let's get a Nick up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Good. I don't think that we need ESPN to tell us that the Jaguars are not going to be a dominant team next year. But the good news is that in this division and in this conference, you don't have to be a dominant team in order to make the playoffs and in order to win. Look at the Colts. The Ravens. They got good production out of their quarterback, and that's what is getting them to the postseason. Gus Bradley has got to manufacture some wins next season. That's what this is going to come down to. And in my opinion, regardless of how people feel about Caldwell, it's on Gus Bradley now. There's nothing else. Caldwell, you know, the offseason's over with. The draft is over with. It's all on Bradley now. This is his ball of wax. And it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, how long Shad Khan stays with this science experiment. You know, is this science project, is he going to stick with it and stay together? I mean, the Jaguars could come out of the gate and be 1-3 and still make the playoffs. So at what point are, and I hear the fans every day, I think the fans are really patient. I have to give the Jaguar fans, because when I listen to this show, one theme that I hear over and over again is most Jaguar fans are really patient. And so what I'm wondering is how long will Khan stick with this thing, and will Bradley be able to manufacture some wins?
All right. Thank you, Nick. Look, a couple of things there. It's very difficult to discern what most fans think of anything, right? Because even though we take a lot of phone calls from time to time, it's a small cross-section of fans that are calling any radio program. And then the ones who call this program, I suspect, are in the more hardcore Jaguar fandom category, and maybe they don't see things as an objective eye as, you know, somebody else who's a more casual fan might. I don't know. So, you know, when you hear there's patience, I grant you. We talked about that yesterday, Tony. The patience to me is more exhibited by the fact that the season ticket numbers are strong, that they're outpacing projections in that regard. So I agree with Nick that there's evidence for the patience out there as far as that goes. And I don't get the sense that 1-3 start to the season is going to send Shad Khan into some kind of a panic, you know. But if they start 1-7, you know, and the season's over halfway through for the third consecutive year, and it's just done, and there's no hope whatsoever, that could be an issue. And I don't suspect there's going to be any kind of in-season change under almost any circumstance, but. What we talked about earlier, you just want to avoid that conversation, period.
Yeah.
Go out there and win your first couple of games, and even then, if you lose at New England and Indy, and you're 2-2, and you played two teams that went to the AFC Championship game and you lost to them, you're a lot more competitive than you've been in the first half of seasons for the last few years, where you haven't, you know, you've been competitive for a half at the most in a given game here or there.
Yeah, and look, I think the broader point here is, you know, we talk about when a list like this comes out, it almost forces you to reconsider where you stand on a lot of these things because, again, we cover this team every day, and we feel about the team the way we do because of how close we are with some of the people inside this building. We want them to be successful, and I think that is it is something that we fight every day, is this idea of we want them to be successful. It's getting into that trap of comparing success in Jacksonville to the previous failures. And feeling like that's good enough when it's not. Look, you're comparing it to success in the National Football League, which is being a team that is perennially competing for a playoff spot, which is being a team that is pushing the Indianapolis Colts at the top of this AFC South division, which isn't that high a hill to climb. I don't think their roster is all that much better than what they have here in Jacksonville. Their quarterback position is established, and that's the big difference between these two rosters in my mind. That's the type of success that needs to happen in Jacksonville. If they're not going to get to that level with this regime, then it's going to be time to say goodnight. And that's at some point here in the next year or two, it's going to be determined whether or not they can or can't get to that kind of level.
All right, got to take a timeout. Coming back, this Dayton football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. Carolina Panther radio voice Mick Mixon going to join us at quarter after the next hour as we take a look at the Jags' first opponent in the 2015 season as we close out the first half of the year here on June 30th. The Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. With that, Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. This date, Tony, going back to 1934, the NFL's Portsmouth Spartans became the franchise that they're known as today. What franchise are the Portsmouth Spartans?
Portsmouth Spartans.
Yes.
No idea.
Detroit Lions.
Okay.
Maybe you could have gone with the Spartans connection with Michigan State. I don't know.
Maybe.
Either way, the Portsmouth Spartans became the Detroit Lions in 1934 in this state. 1965, on June 30th, the NFL granted the Atlanta Falcons a franchise. And surely to a lot of people in Atlanta, they're going, really? We got a team here? I mean, because have you seen their attendance at times in the postseason? 1984.
But it's loud in that building. It's loud.
Well, it is loud. 1984, the longest pro football game in terms of time went with the LA Express beating the Michigan Panthers in the USFL playoffs 27-21, Tony, a game that lasted 93 minutes and 33 seconds, so into the third overtime of that game in the USFL playoffs back in 1984. I watched the 30 for 30 again this weekend on the USFL. Pretty fascinating for no other reason than to look at Donald Trump's hair. The exact same, just a little bit thicker back in the 80s than it is right now. And famous passing on this date, Elmer Layden, Tony, one of the legendary Notre Dame Four Horsemen, died on this date in 1973. I'll give you a nickel if you can name any of the other three horsemen.
I don't know the horsemen.
I didn't think you would. Quarterback Harry Stuhldreher, left halfback Jim Crowley, and right halfback Don Miller joined fullback Elmer Layden as being immortalized as the Four Horsemen of Notre Dame. Of course, on this date in 2004, Colin Michael Dempsey was born. Happy birthday, big boy! I'll see you in a little while. That is this date in football history. It is brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, doing business here in North Florida for over 20 years. First Coast Roofing, the only call you need to make for all your roofing needs, in-home, for your business, repairs, re-roofs. Call today for a free estimate at 287-7756, license number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, sometimes the gears of justice turn pretty slowly. John Abraham is getting a taste of that today as he has been charged with misdemeanor battery stemming from an incident that occurred on February 28th of 2014.
Yeah, DeAndre Johnson's like, wait a minute, they don't move that slowly.
At least this story doesn't involve another NFL player striking a woman. Instead, it seems to involve Abraham being upset as he was approached by someone at the Pink Pony Strip Club in Atlanta in the parking lot that night, someone that apparently Abraham had a previous beef with. Do you remember the story from last season when Buffalo played Detroit and then Bills quarterback Kyle Orton complained about a laser pointer that was used by a fan to try to distract him? The laser pointer villain, Marco Beslock, has pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of disorderly conduct. Beslock is just 18 years old and paid a fine of $235. He was given 80 hours of community service, so take note, unruly fans, trying to give their team any edge they possibly can. I'm not saying that Florida or any other state would handle it quite the same way, but that's at least what he got in Michigan. Also, just looking back on it, Kyle Orton threw for 308 yards that day, including a touchdown to Golden Tate on the way to a 17-14 Buffalo victory. So Beslock paid the fine, is doing the community service, and they didn't even win.
That's like 2 weeks of work, man. 80 hours of community service. I saw that yesterday. I thought, man, that's a lot of time that would keep me off the golf course. I think I'll leave my laser pointer at home. Last night, Tony, Marshawn Lynch went on Conan O'Brien's show. He's very media-friendly, this Marshawn Lynch fellow. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but he's very media-savvy.
Yes.
And loves to put his life story out there, loves to answer inane questions from
reporters.
I'm
just here so I won't get fined.
Yes. This is Marshawn Lynch last night talking about, speaking of being fined, he's not only fined for not talking, he's been fined at times for various body grabs on his way across the goal line. Here's what he had to say last night on Conan.
You get fined a lot. You've been fined a lot for, we have a shot of it, grabbing your crotch. that was like a ballet move right there. I used to get in the early days after I'd tell a really funny joke, I'd jump up in the air and grab my crotch. NBC at the time was like, you can't do that.
Oh,
but you have shown the way. You have shown the way for how all of us should act.
Man, just trying to put it out there, man. I done got in a lot of trouble for grabbing my ding-ding.
Yeah. You call it your ding-ding?
My ding-ding.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You probably shouldn't use the phrase, put it out there.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I mean, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm grown now, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I grew up.
You gotta grab your ding-ding.
I mean, you
sometimes
know.
A guy's gotta grab his ding-ding.
Hey,
I think
man.
That's a line that will never be repeated. Okay, that's $500 right
oh,
now.
Oh, damn.
Well, there you have it. please send all protests, courtesy of Tyler D at 1010XL.com. And there's Marshawn, Tony. And apparently, he had him dive into an end zone full of Skittles last night while he was, appropriately ringing that bell, if you know what I'm saying. And, how much you want to bet that Skittles, somehow there was money exchanged. Marshawn Lynch is going to appear on Conan O'Brien. I'm sure everybody wanted to talk to him, right? Following the Super Bowl. Seems odd to me that he would be on there unless there was some kind of sponsor tie-in.
I'm sure there is. And maybe that's the end zone full of Skittles, like you said.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
That's what got him on there.
All right, 641-1010. I'm about to sneeze. I'm trying to stifle it. Let's go to Terrence. Hi, Terrence.
Hey, Mike. Hey.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, you had to bring me on after the ding ding. That's crazy.
What's that now? What about the ding ding?
Y'all bring me on after the ding ding.
You came on. You came on right after. From now on, Terrence. From now on, I'm going to instruct Tyler, and you come on. We're going to have a little bell, a little bicycle bell that rings for you every time to announce your presence. How about that?
Okay, guys. Hey, it's not like the fans are starting to panic, and it's just June. I'm looking at the schedule, and, you know, everybody's starting to criticize Dave. I mean, if you look at the first draft, I mean, it's hard for a general manager to come in the first year and hit his picks right off the bat. So I'm looking at the first draft, and the only person out of that draft I really want to come through is Luke Joko. And that's the part that, and, you know, he worries me a little bit. You look at the 2014, if you ask yourself about Linder, what do you think about Linder? Telvin Smith, Allen Robinson, and Aaron Colvin. That draft is looking pretty good.
No, but, I agree.
I think that the only reason everybody's up in arms right now, I believe, is we're really not sure about Blake Bortles. So I think, if the quarterback, if it was in our minds that Blake was fine, I think we'll be okay. So I'm looking at the schedule, the first seven games. If we went home, we have four home games out of the first seven, which it went, the one home game is in London. If we lose the New England ending, I mean, we can really go 5-2. I mean, if we can really pull, 4-3 would be good by the bye. So, right. I mean, right? I mean, like, so I think, let's see what happened the first two games, and then we'll go from there. So.
All right, Terrence, you're the voice of reason, right, and I'm not sure I like that anymore, but I don't know what's come over him. Thank you very much. Wasn't that like at the end of, was it end of Rocky II when they got in the ring?
No, right. it was
at Rocky III.
Rocky
right?
III, getting into Rocky IV.
Because Apollo had trained him, and he said, "You want to ring that bell?" And he goes, "Ding, ding, ding." Right there, you go. Very nice. So look, I don't think fans don't take this as fans were up in arms today. They're reacting to a story on ESPN.com, which ranks the next 3 years, basically a power poll for the future, right? And they ranked the Jags 32nd in that power poll for the future. And hey, look, again, it's their prerogative. None of that's going to have any impact on what actually happens on the field, but it's still interesting, I think, to see what the national perspective is of where this team is headed. Not just where they are, but where they're headed.
And to give you an idea, look, Dallas was 28th in this same article last year. They're 6th this year. They were 28 last year. They're 6th this year. Minnesota was 26th last year on the same list. They're 7th in the NFL on this list projecting the next 3 years this year. And look, for Dallas, it was about that offensive line gelling, and everyone had questions about what they were doing in the draft.
And the defense outplaying expectations.
Right. And in Minnesota, it's Teddy Bridgewater and these other pieces coming into play.
And primarily Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
But
so
the
if Bortles works,
Peterson,
right. If Bortles works in 2015, you're going to watch the Jags be somewhere in the middle of the pack next year.
Right. And again, it doesn't matter. It's still, to me, interesting to see how much of a step back, even though, that they took.
It is startling.
Based on the acquisitions that they've made to this roster. But
yeah,
the record
10 teams
is,
pass them.
Right, but the record was what the record was, and they went from 4-3 wins, so it's hard to argue that. Let's get Jared in before we break. Mick Mixon of the Carolina Panthers coming up next. Hi, Jared, how are you?
Good, thank you for taking me, guys.
Sure.
I will let you know before I get into it that I definitely am a half-glass empty guy. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised than to get my hopes than be disappointed. But with that being said, I think that at least the thing that about the ESPN article that we're talking about, if I heard that correctly, or maybe it was SportsCenter, one of the big heads, is that I think that the trend, whether it be fair or not, is that a coach has anywhere, the medium is about 3 years. It's either, one less or one more, something like that. So what worries me, at least about this team, is that I think that Bortles will write the story for Caldwell, just because of, you know, that being the quarterback that he drafted and going this and that. But if we don't start getting some wins, I do worry that Gus, who I think is a good coach, could, you know, possibly be let go. But one of the things that I think does hurt him, and Tony, one of the things that I really disagree with you on, and you can say how you feel about it, but if you think that having an established quarterback does not make that Colt Mountain farther away than some people see it, after being a fan of this franchise for so long and not having an established quarterback, I think that that is a big deal. And if the Texans can find anybody that can throw that ball with that defense backing them up, I think they're going to be an interesting team in the division too. And I'll take your comments off there, and thank you, guys.
All right, thank you, Jared.
Look, when talking about the Colts, I think that when you look at the excuse me, the Colts roster outside of Andrew Luck, I think the Jaguars are pretty comparable to what the Colts actually have up there. And I think it speaks to the difference of having Andrew Luck compared to trying to find a guy that can solidify the quarterback position for you. I think if Blake Bortles is the man, right, and if he's going to play like a top 10, 12 quarterback in this league, I think the Jaguars can push the Indianapolis Colts inside this division.
Right. If you had Joe Flacco on this team right now, right?
I think they'd push the Colts.
Guy. Exactly. That's what I'm agreeing with you. If they had that kind of guy that you knew what to expect, was pretty efficient, could make plays. Certainly, you know, defense, running game has helped him out tremendously, but that's how this team wants to win football games.
Right.
And we know what happens with Joe Flacco when he gets to the postseason. He plays his best football. Give us Joe Flacco, that guy who's got the 6-7 years of seasoning and experience and where he is and confidence and comfort level. And how close is that gap, or how big is that gap?
Sure.
Might be non-existent.
Yeah, and I say it to point out how big a difference maker I think Andrew Luck is in the NFL right now. The fact that I do think they're kind of that close as far as the teams, but Andrew Luck elevates what the Indianapolis Colts are that much.
Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Coming back with Carolina Panther play-by-play man Mick Mixon next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, long way to go until the season starts, but it will be here eventually. Got to get through the summer, get through training camp, and all that. But we decided we'll start taking a look at what the Jags have in store for them and their fans this season and do it in the order in which they'll appear. In other words, they kick things off this season with the Carolina Panthers, and with that, we welcome in here on Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. The voice of the Panthers, Mick Mixon, joining us here on 1010XL. Good morning, Mick. How are you, sir?
Oh, God, fantastic, man. Your show sounds good. The music, man, I've got chills here listening to the ramp up and thinking about opening day, Jacksonville and Carolina. How you guys been living down there in J-Town?
It's hot. we lost our first-round draft pick in about 60 minutes of minicamp practice. So we're just doing fine, Mick. And we've won 9 games in 3 years. We're doing peachy down here. All right.
Well, you get no sympathy up here, man. We made there for a few years before we signed Cam Newton. We made the forward pass look like it had just been invented.
Well, and fortunately for you guys, you seem to have settled on who that quarterback is, though. I think Tony and I discussed this when Cam Newton came up. He's not a perfect quarterback, okay? But how many are? You had to sign him to that long-term extension up there, didn't you?
Oh, my golly, yes. I mean, it would have been like, you know, the Rolling Stones moving on from Mick Jagger, Steven Tyler being kicked out of Aerosmith. I mean, every band needs a lead singer. And as you indicate, Mike, Cam's not perfect, but he's gotten better every year. Even though he had the gaudy stats his first 2 years, not as many wins. But on sort of the other part of his resume, he's taken the Panthers to the playoffs 2 straight years. Last year we had the pitiful 3-8-1 start. I remember flying back from Minnesota after giving up, the Panthers gave up 2 block punts for touchdowns in the same game. The Vikings hadn't even had one in a game since maybe 1970, and the Panthers prop their world up and get them 2 in the same game. And I'm thinking, do our coaches break down the game film, or do they go to Kinko's and start working on their resumes? I mean, it was just, but the team stayed together. I still can't believe it. That the Panthers still rallied around Cam Newton, Ryan Khalil, the other leaders on the club, Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly, and they got a little lucky in the division, but the Panthers went undefeated in December. So I think Carolina's thinking the best is yet to be for us, as we now have Cam Newton signed through 2020.
Speaking of Cam Newton, this is a guy who really the most effective part of his game since he got in the league is his ability to run. He's been a goal line threat since he got to Carolina. He's turned a lot of those drives that ended in field goals for a number of years before that into touchdowns with his legs. He gets the mega contract this offseason. Has he improved enough as a passer, especially from the pocket, that you feel like he really is worthy of this contract at this point in his career?
I think so. Is this Fat Tony?
Yes.
I'm looking at this is you on YouTube with a UC Santa Cruz shirt on?
That's me.
That's my man right there.
Why do they call you Fat Tony?
Mike gave me the nickname years ago when I started working because my last name is Smith, and he said I must be in witness protection.
I don't believe his name's Tony Smith, Nick. So I think there's a backstory to that. But
yeah, Mike, he's got the sense of humor, man. You got to watch him. But, you know, as quarterbacks, as they get better and they get older, Tony, as I'm sure you and Mike counsel your audience, they tend to run less. But Cam still has that. I mean, that just overwhelming physical skill. He's not just a good runner for a quarterback. He's a good runner for a runner. And with what he can do in the red zone, particularly on the goal line, just jumping over people, finding a spot, powering his way into the end zone, I mean, he's a handful. So I really think that, you know, 20 years from now, I think that a lot of this is what most NFL quarterbacks will look like. Your question is a good one, though, and the premise of it has to do with his passing accuracy. Cam's default bad throw is wild high. He chicken wings it a little bit, the elbow drops down, the lead shoulder comes up, and then boom, the ball sails high. This notion that the Panthers are signing tall wide receivers so that they can go get Cam Newton's high throws, that's asinine. You fix the underlying disorder, right? You get Cam Newton's mechanics quieted down, the ball geometry. He's worked extremely hard on that. And I almost hate to even say how good he's looked at minicamp and OTAs, although he has been just made all the throws. He's looked incredible. Because things can change when the defense starts coming at you, wanting to hit you and tackle you. But I think the answer to your question is definitely a yes, that Cam Newton does have the skill set. He doesn't just chuck and duck and, you know, guess out there. He's reading coverages, reading defenses, and he's been a captain the last 2 years. I think the Panthers feel pretty settled at quarterback.
Carolina Panther radio voice Mick Mixon here with us on 1010XL. Mick, you mentioned the 3-8-1 start, and that came despite winning the first two games of the season last year for the Panthers. The year before, when they're winning 12 games, they started 1-3. So based on the overall record, they've had really poor starts each of the last 2 years. Is there some reason for that that it was consistent from one year to the next, or is that just kind of the way the chips fell?
I think it's just the randomness of the universe, Mike. I mean, the Panthers have played a very difficult schedule the last couple of years to start off with. I mean, it's been very bloody right away with, I remember Seattle being in the mix the first couple of games a year or two ago. And, you know, it's crazy. The press corps here will try to read all these columns in June, July, and August about how the Panthers need to get off to a better start this year, as if we're trying to get off to a poor start. I mean, the club's trying to get off to a good start, but these other teams have had something to do with it. This is a fascinating sort of collection of coaches, though. Down the hall from where I'm talking with you now, here on the second floor of Bank of America Stadium, there's a coaching staff that's remained intact even after two divisional championship seasons. How much longer is Sean McDermott going to be the D coordinator here? He's a head coach in waiting. How much longer is Mike Shula going to be the offensive coordinator here? He's a head coach in waiting. We have other coaches on our staff that are young and bright-eyed and limber-backed and just mediagenic. So I think that the time is now. I think that this is kind of the confluence of several rivers. We mentioned Cam Newton, this defense with Kuechly, Thomas Davis, good linebackers, getting better in the back half. The questions will be offensive line. They'll be wide receiver. They'll be in the defensive secondary and in special teams. But I think the Panthers' goals are absolute victory this year.
Talking about wide receiver, Kelvin Benjamin, obviously the first-round pick out of Florida State last year. He's a big-time playmaker. He can go up and get the ball, and he makes some of the craziest catches you've ever seen. The knock on him coming out of Florida State, not much of a route runner. He was relying more on that size and that athleticism. Is that what you saw last year? Did you watch him develop over the course of the year, and how has he looked in this offseason?
Good question, Tony. I think he's looked better in terms of his route, the route tree, and his grasp of the side adjustments and the nuances of running routes as an NFL wide receiver. They can all catch and they can all run and jump, but Can they block? Do they know when to break contact downfield? Do they have that situational awareness where they don't get the penalty on them of illegal contact or blocking for too long? Kelvin Benjamin had a couple knucklehead plays last year where he had his man pretty much blocked out of the play. The ball's already past him, and then he goes all, you know, Mid-Atlantic Championship wrestling on a guy and draws a flag. So I think really for Kelvin, the physical tools are there. It's just a matter of can he get his drop rate down to where Cam Newton has a complete trust in him to throw the ball to him, knowing that Kelvin Benjamin is going to outfight defenders for the ball and not just try to catch it, but insist on catching it. And then how can he continue to develop his skills without the football?
Mick, coming into last year, Greg Hardy was one of the most feared pass rushers in the National Football League. We all understand his situation last year, suspended for the season. To have him off the roster now, to have that situation resolved, is there just kind of a breath of fresh air in the building to not that have that hanging over the franchise anymore?
Yeah, I don't know, Mike. I mean, it was the story siphoned a lot of attention off last year, and you understand the reasons for that. To agree with your choice of words, a breath of fresh air, I mean, I don't want to make it sound as if the Panthers are glad that Greg Hardy is not here anymore. Greg Hardy had a lot of friends and still does have a lot of friends on the team in this locker room, a lot of people rooting for Greg Hardy as a man and as a football player. But I hear what you're saying, and I think it felt in a lot of ways the same way when we parted company with Steve Smith. That was a very difficult decision for the franchise to make. I think that, you know, a player like Smitty who is not just competitive, he can be combative. I think that what the Panthers are trying to do is to build not just a collection of elite athletes, but to build a team that loves one another, cares for one another, gets along well. And I think that's what Dave Gettleman has done a very good job of doing.
As Mike mentioned, Greg Hardy is one of the most feared pass rushers in the league, especially coming into last season. Have the Panthers done enough to replace his kind of production on the field to kind of supplement what they do have, that strength that they do have at linebacker with one of the best in the league at Luke Kuechly?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe, but there's only Mother Nature only gives you a few Greg Hardys every 10 or 20 million births, I would imagine. I mean, he's rare. Greg Hardy's rare with how twitchy he was coming out of his stance, can play with a hand on the ground, two hands on the ground, could tackle. So is there another Greg Hardy out there? Charles Johnson is a very, very fine player. We've got strength in the interior in Star Latulele, and Coney Ealy has got potential, Mario Addison. I mean, there's a Frank Alexander. There's other guys, but nobody with the Q rating, except for maybe Charles Johnson, that Greg Hardy took with him to Dallas.
How big of an impact can Shaq Thompson make, the first-round pick of the Carolina Panthers? I think a surprise pick to some, but you project him to start alongside Kuechly and Thomas Davis right from the jump, Mick?
Yeah, he was a surprise pick to me because I messed that up on the Mike Dempsey pre-draft show. I thought Carolina was probably going to go lineman. That has haunted me, by the way, since we had that conversation, Mike, back in late April. Early May, but the Panthers did a good job of camouflaging their desire. I mean, they had Shaq Thompson identified early on as an any era, old school, Luke Kuechly type of football player, physical, skull crusher, can cover tight ends, can cover back swinging out of the backfield on the wheel routes and some of the things that backs do to get open, particularly against the zone defenses that many NFL teams play. And he doesn't look little. I mean, that was one of the big fears that just me personally that I had. Remember we signed, you remember Everett Brown from Florida State?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A couple years ago. Love Everett Brown. I mean, just a joyful guy, a delight of a man. But when we signed him and I came up here for his press conference, I was looking around going, well, where's Everett Brown? When is Everett getting here? And they said, well, that's him right over there. And I thought he was the video intern. I mean, he just didn't look like... But Shaq looks the part. I mean, he looks like he's got the frame, and looks like he's just a football player. I mean, why wouldn't there be room on the field for a guy? Does he have to be 6'4", 250 to play Will? Does he have to be 6'6", 1205 to play strong safety. I mean, I think he's just a good football player, and I think you'll see that.
7-8-1 last year for the Carolina Panthers. They took advantage of the opportunity to have that home playoff game as a division winner with a pretty banged-up Arizona team coming in. They get the win in the playoffs last year, too. What are the expectations for this Carolina team going into 2015?
Well, Tony, you're not going to see Ryan Khalil take out any ads in the Charlotte Observer guaranteeing a Super Bowl or any crazy thing like that like he did the other year. But I do think there is a quiet confidence on this team. I think the Carolina Panther team, number one, they know they're good. Number two, they have the psychological hardness that the really good teams have because adversity breeds togetherness. And that's from where the Panthers were last year to where they finished up. I think this last year's team, even though NFL teams remake themselves from year to year, so many new parts, the 2015 Panthers are not the 2014 Panthers, but the 2014 Panthers put a lesson out there of resiliency, what you can do if you stay together and stay united in a belief. I think having Greg Olsen back as tight end, that was one of the biggest signings in the offseason for the Panthers. Didn't get a lot of fanfare, but it was Greg Olsen because of what he brings to the offense. I think the goals are double-digit. Well, the goal, of course, will be to go to a Super Bowl, just like Jacksonville. But I think the expectation, a realistic expectation, and the quiet confidence that's in the locker room is double-digit wins and a very deep playoff run.
All right, well, you know, and the good thing is you're used to the slow start, so 0-1's not going to faze you after a trip down to Jacksonville here in September, Mick. So we're thinking big early, brother, because this is the time we shine in the off season. Haven't shined a whole lot during the season recently, so we're going to enjoy it while we can. It'll be good to see you down here. You need to study harder for next year's mock draft now, because that is, you know, you want to keep your spot. We're going to have to get better results out of you. We want to know that Shaq Thompson's coming to Carolina or whoever 2016's Shaq Thompson turns out to be, Mick.
I know. I'm worried I might lose my spot to our sideline reporter. Next year you're going to have our statistician on or someone like that to make the pick.
No, we'll just have Everett Brown. He's available, and he looks like a statistician, so he should fill in admirably. Mick, we're just kidding with you. We appreciate the time, as always. Enjoy the summer, as long and hot as it's going to be, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you as the season dawns.
I appreciate Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Good talking to you guys, and y'all keep in touch.
All right, buddy. Mick Mixon, the voice of the Carolina Panthers, Tony. I mean, this is where they were last year. We just laid out the record, but think about this. They're 3-8-1, okay? And the one was a tie in which Cincinnati, who was it? Is Mike Nugent still kicking in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Missed like a 33-yard field goal, right? I mean, something that you expect them to hit most times. So that could have easily been 3-9 sitting there. Jags were 2-10. Going into December last year. The difference is the Carolina Panthers won games in the final month of the season. But, Tony, they played the Bucs, who are the worst team in football. They won by 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they played Cleveland the next week. They won by 4 points. That's a team Jacksonville beat. And then they handled Atlanta and the Saints handily in the month of December. But because of that, at 7-8-1, they get in the playoffs.
Yep.
They win a game. So now they feel completely different about their franchise than other. Now, granted, they won 12 games the year before. But, again, Greg Hardy out of the mix. People had questions. Is Cam Newton taking a step back? But they win when they have to. They get into the playoffs, and they win a playoff game. And now the outlook, the way they feel. I'm not saying the Jags aren't confident, but the Carolina Panthers are looking at it the way Mick just said. They know they're good. That's how they feel about it. They know they're good, and they expect a deep playoff run this year, and that's a team that was sitting there at 3-8-1 through 3 months of the season last year. Pretty remarkable.
It is.
I mean, just go out there, win your games late in the season, get into the mix, and good things can happen to you. There you go. Mick Mixon, voice of the Carolina Panthers, and we'll talk Dolphin football coming up on Thursday as we pick off the Jags opponents one by one in order of appearance coming up. Fan feedback spotlight today asking you, and it's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what's the best birthday gift you've ever gotten or given that's Jaguar-related? Share your thoughts. We'll look at some of the feedback we've gotten on Twitter and Facebook. Coming up next, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Tuesday's brought to you by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch we come. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on this Tuesday. Tuesdays presented by Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt, Jaguars Today. Today's question of the day, in honor of the greatest 11-year-old in the world, is what's the best Jaguar-related birthday gift you've ever given or received? Happy birthday, Colin Dempsey, who could care less about any sports team affiliation if it doesn't say Lego on it. He'd vote for the Lego bricks. Would be his favorite team.
Has there been like a Lego movie car or anything in NASCAR yet? Like for a week or two? I'm sure
maybe.
It was.
Maybe. I mean, we used to root for Kyle Busch because of the M&M's connection. And every once in a while, he'll catch me watching a NASCAR race. He'll ask me what Kyle Busch is doing. He doesn't really care. He's just like, you know, when he was like five, he's like, oh, M&M's.
Right.
If I watch this, maybe I'll get M&M's. I don't know if that... How they
My brother was a Kyle
works.
Petty fan, didn't care, but he drove the Mellow Yellow car.
Oh, there you go.
And
Mellow Yellow is disgusting.
He liked Mellow Yellow.
Your brother has bad taste. But that's okay. That's okay. Tony, what have people been giving and receiving as Jaguar fans for their birthday?
Here's what we got from Eric. The best I ever received was a Tony Baselli signed jersey. I also give tickets as birthday gifts. That's kind of cool.
Oh.
From T-Mock, Jags gave me a home win on my birthday in 2013, Thursday night against the Texans. From Ocho Fisho, Medio got, from Black Dog, excuse me, best Jag gift, airfare and tickets to Chicago. From brother-in-law to see the Jags in 98, their comeback to beat the Bears, 24-23. From Isaiah, a Mark Brunell jersey. From Duval Doom, he says he can't listen much yet because he's got his new gig. What's up, Doom? But I would say have to say that first year when we bought season tickets for my birthday. And from Joshua, this bad boy, and he's got a picture of a Josh Scobie jersey with a new barbecue grill, hashtag best Jags B-Day gift, hashtag awesome girlfriend.
Now, what should I ask for my birthday for the Jags this year? I'm on December 7th. They play the 6th against Tennessee on the road, and then they're home the following week against the Indianapolis Colts. I think I'll ask for a home victory over the Colts.
I think so, too.
I think the Jags can handle the Titans without my birthday intervention.
Ask for both.
On that score. Ooh, would that be greedy? Would that be considered greedy? Since my son's not asking for anything Jaguar-related, maybe that wouldn't be greedy. I'll get one for him, one for me. And won't that be nice? Honestly, right now, just give me that Carolina Panther game on September 13th.
1-0, man.
1-0. Give us a week of 1-0, please. Jaguar fans deserve a week of 1-0, a week of unbridled, unfounded optimism. Just, hey, we're going 13-3 this year.
That's right. You had a half of it last year. I remember sitting in here when they were at Philadelphia.
We couldn't believe it.
Watching that first half, and we were like, oh, my gosh.
Did we all underestimate this team? We all thought they'd be better, but
right.
This much better?
Everything we thought was going to happen and more is
17
happening.
17-0, Tony.
And then the second half happened, and we all remember what happened in the second half of that football game, and all that hope kind of disappeared. And then the next week, Chad Henne got beat and banged around. And
10 times.
Just 10 times against the Washington Redskins.
Only 10.
Got sacked 10 times against the Redskins, and then it was Bortles time. At halftime the next week against Indianapolis, because once again, I remember the Bronx cheers for a first down halfway through the second quarter in that week 3 game against Indianapolis. So can we just get better than that?
Sarcastic cheering is not what we're looking for.
It was a first down. Toby Gerhart crossed that first down marker, and everyone, yay!
That was part for the whole team. It was part also with Toby, you know, getting hurt, starting slow.
Yep.
Didn't look quick to the hole and all these things. And probably had some valid reasons. Was banged up in training camp, banged up to start the regular season, whatever the case. 10 sacks in a game, Tony. You think about it. At 71, which is an abysmal number last year. That's 4.5 a game on average. 10!
10.
10! I mean, come on. That's unacceptable at any level of football. Just run the ball every time in the second half if you're on one of those kind of paces.
Right.
So, we will get into the Dolphins later on this week and the Patriots and Colts next week. And each week we'll pick off a couple of the Jags opponents in order of appearance as they will show up on the schedule this year. And we'll get into that. Again, final numbers on this ranking, the Jags on the ESPN.com thing with John Clayton, Lewis Riddick, and Mike Sando weighing in and voting and scoring them. Again, the five categories were roster minus quarterback, just the non-quarterback portion of the roster, the quarterback position, the draft, the front office, and coaching. Jags went down significantly in every category. And again, draft, I don't know if they're just being penalized because they got unlucky with Dante Fowler Jr., but it was a draft that was praised by everyone and had I thought, an outstanding draft last year. So you have a better picture of that draft, of how that draft developed. But Jags ranked 32nd overall in the cumulative rankings here. They dropped from 13th to 27th place in front office. So at this point, the front office was thought very highly of last year. Read that as the GM. That's really what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what has Dave Caldwell done in a year's time? What, pick a guy who he couldn't have known was going to tear his ACL? Go out there and sign some impact free agents? What could he have done differently to keep himself from tumbling from 13th to 27th in the front office ranking?
It's just weird. Like, I understand the Jaguars probably should be in the bottom quarter of this list, right? I mean, they should be somewhere between 24 and 32 in all likelihood. It's just, I don't know what they were looking at that they think they got worse in some of the categories, where they think they got significantly worse in a bunch of these categories. I don't understand what the perspective on that is.
Look, bottom line, they're all going to say you've won 3 games last year, you won 4 the year before. And even if you want to stop there with the Caldwell-Bradley regime, that's fair. And who cares? Ultimately, in the final analysis, it won't matter when they line up against Carolina what Mike Sando thought of the Jacksonville Jaguars back in June.
No, and I think maybe the draft number, that may be a direct reaction to what they saw from Blake Bortles in year one.
Could be.
And it's not unfair for those guys to have that kind of reaction to what they saw from Blake in year one. Again, he was the bottom-ranked quarterback on any of those lists you look at. There's a lot of hope and enthusiasm for Blake Bortles here in Jacksonville, and I think there are reasons to have that if you're watching this team on a day-by-day perspective, but he hadn't shown anything on the field yet that makes you think this is the man. And if they're going to react to it that way, I can understand why a little bit.
We are done. One in the books. Thanks to Kenny Lane Associates, DivorceMenOnly.com, our Tuesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. Thanks for playing along with us out there in Radio Land. We appreciate Mick Mixon, voice of the Carolina Panthers, for stopping by to talk some Carolina Panther football. Plenty of Blake Bortles tomorrow. Get some angles we'll get into on that tomorrow. And we'll take your calls once again as we embark on the second half of the year, starting tomorrow, July 1st. Turn the page and march that much closer to the start of the 2015 NFL season. So, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, where's that guy been? Man, it's quiet around these parts. And for everybody else, all the aforementioned, I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today. Coming up next, XL Primetime here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.